Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hello again, everyone. You have no doubt been hearing about the G20 meeting that took place in Toronto this past weekend. Leaders from around the world gathering to discuss the future of economic growth and recovery and debate stimulus versus reducing debt. Well, that wasn't the only high-powered economic meeting that took place in the past week. Last Tuesday and Wednesday saw the first ever New York Forum, a conference here in New York that could become a much bigger thing, that brought together some of the world's top business leaders and thinkers to try to answer a not-so-simple question: what's next for U.S. capitalism? Rupert Murdoch of News Corp, Vikram Pandit of Citigroup, Mayor Bloomberg, Mexican mogul and part owner of the New York Times, Carlos Slim, were there. CEOs, professors, reporters, others all gathered for 2 days of meetings. And if this sounds a lot like the World Economic Forum, that Uber-exclusive annual meeting in Davos, Switzerland, you're not far off. The New York Forum was organized by Richard Attias, who served as producer of the World Economic Forum for 15 years. Attias is chairman of the Experience Corporation, in addition to his work in Davos. He helped launch the Clinton Global Initiative, and he joins us now to discuss what was said at the New York Forum, as well as other items in a busy economy week. We will talk about the big debate at the G20 over stimulus versus taking care of deficits, which is actually a bigger risk to the global economy, and financial reform, where it looks like there are loopholes big enough to drive a truck full of lobbyists through. Richard Attias, welcome to WNYC.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your invitation.
And first, on the New York Forum, you were quoted as saying that the goal of the summit was to answer two questions. One, does America have a future? Oh, my God, are we really asking that question? And two, what is the future of capitalism? Is it a system that still works? So you are getting down to basics, and you had 2 days to answer those questions. Mission accomplished?
I think so. You know, the first mission was also a call for action, because I found that the past 2 years, the business community was too discreet, and we were not really hearing the voice of the business leaders. So what really was the DNA of the New York Forum was to give a voice to the business community, and I think this goal was definitely achieved.
I stop you on that for a minute?
Please.
Because I know a lot of listeners are thinking immediately, wait, considering your attendees, Rupert Murdoch didn't have a voice, Vikram Pandit of Citigroup didn't have a voice, Mayor Bloomberg, Carlos Slim?
It's a very good question. In fact, the voice is not only the speakers, you know, the speakers of the panels. The New York Forum format was quite unique. We had only very few panels with the people that you are mentioning, because they are always very well known. Mm-hmm. But in fact, what was more important and what was representing 70% of the discussion, what we call the task forces, where you have group of 60, 70 people working together and trying to find solution to the main issues that the global economy is facing. And to be honest, of course, the great speakers, the big names that you mentioned, came to express their point of view. But what was more important, again, was to come with some solutions on the global issues. And that goal was achieved because the people who are not the big moguls, as you say, who are very shy sometimes, they definitely took the floor. They even challenged the big guys, what I call sometimes even the old guard. And they came with new ideas, because one of the goals of the New York Forum was to give a voice to pioneers, to young entrepreneurs, and to try to think out of the box. And we came with ideas, because we came with new ideas on how to create jobs, for example. And definitely it was a consensus on creating jobs, but this will come only through innovation. And innovation will come just through medium and small-sized companies. And these medium and small-sized companies, today they don't have access to mortgage and to loans. So one of the ideas which came, which was submitted to the G20, was, okay, let's put banks on innovation. banks who will finance innovative projects. Because today, if you want to raise some money when you are a small company or when you are a young entrepreneur, it's quite difficult to find money. So instead of putting stimulus on very large corporations, a very interesting concept was, okay, don't always support these big corporations. Let some of them fail. Why not? And then help new ideas. So it's more easy to say than to implement, but it's, I think, a beginning of a solution to have at least this bank on innovation.
And it also shows, I think, some of the tensions around what banks are being asked to do, because in the financial reform, as well as other things, banks are being asked to have more capital on hand, that is, to take less risk with lending, because we see what excessive risk led to in the last few years. But then on the other hand, you get President Obama and maybe you and what you just said turning around and saying, come on, banks, take some risks on some of these small entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. You know, many participants took some examples, like even Israel as a startup. You know, Israel, which is a country which is having a big wars, spending a lot of money on defense, has today, in a very small country of 6 million people, much more innovation than some big countries even in Europe. So definitely the audience was trying to convince the political leaders that they should definitely support young entrepreneurs. And I would be very interesting to see how in the next few days the G20 will react on at least that proposal. The second one was also to be much more flexible on helping talents to circulate, to have no borders for talents, which means that to be able to find the right talent for the job that you are looking to have in your company. And sometimes when you have, you know, I am a European, and we always admire the United States of America as being a fabulous platform which welcomes so many people coming from all over the world, and you build an amazing country with great brands coming from all over the world. And this should continue to happen.
And my guest is Richard Attias, chairman of the Experience Corporation. At one point, he helped launch the Clinton Global Initiative. He was producer of the World Economic Forum in Davos and launched perhaps what will become a similar thing called the New York Forum, which had its first annual session last week. As Europe, what country are you from, by the way?
In fact, I was born in Morocco, but I was educated in France.
Uh-huh. I wonder what your take is on the basic tension at the G20 over the weekend, because I think we saw fears over growing deficits in Europe eclipsing the push for stimulus spending to get the economy out of its doldrums. The U.S. wanted more stimulus spending. The European countries were saying, no, we can't afford that right now because it's going to give us more deficit, which is going to hold down growth in the long term. It was actually kind of a reversal of positions. Usually it's the U.S. that's more, concerned about deficits and free markets, and Europe that's doing more government spending on the social safety net. So how do you see the geopolitics of that conversation?
But, you know, I have my own explanations, you know. The problem is that what happened in Greece and that what we could happen in other European countries have definitely shown that Europe is not in good health at all. And there is definitely a consensus that all the government in Europe, all the states, should definitely reduce their expenses. During the economic crisis, the financial crisis, I have to say that the United States helped a lot the banks and large corporations through the stimulus. And I think personally that many corporations have cleaned already the situation. It's not still the time of recovering, but I'm quite optimistic. I think it will take a few years, but I think the process is on. In Europe, the banks were quite stable, but I'm not sure that they definitely cleaned the situation. And because the worst could be ahead, I'm not sure they are ready to support again and again through stimulus.
What do you mean by clean the situation?
I'm not sure that what was done in total transparency. One of the goals of the New York Forum was to try to have more transparency and to understand much better the situation. In Europe, people are asking for much more transparency to understand really the situation. We don't know exactly what is the situation in Spain. We don't know exactly what is the situation in Portugal. So, and this is what today is the complexity of Europe, and this is why also the euro as a currency is quite weak.
Well, Paul Krugman, liberal economist, of course, and columnist, wrote in his New York Times column today that a fear over deficits prevails over a commitment to stimulus. We are facing what he called a third depression, citing the two great depressions of the last 150 years. He says we may actually be heading toward a third one, which is ongoing job instability and seriously sluggish growth over the long term, because deflation is a bigger risk than inflation. So he thinks the G20 and the European nations in particular are getting it all wrong right now, because actually the bigger risk is if we go down this deflationary spiral caused by not enough spending right now to juice the economy out of its doldrums. How much do you think he's off base?
To be honest, I am not far to think like Paul Krugman.
You're similar to him.
Yes. And I am today in Europe. I am in Paris. I'm calling you from Paris.
Yes.
And the situation here, I have to say, people are quite scared. They have no real visibility. They don't know exactly what will be next. So people are not really investing. This is why I think the only way will be to be totally transparent. Exactly when you are a CEO, I think political leaders should definitely react as CEOs, which means that when your corporation is in trouble, you need definitely to make a real audit, to be totally transparent with your employees, to explain to them exactly what is the situation, what was wrong. We all do mistakes, but we need to learn from our mistakes and to explain how we will correct the situation. And this is what is missing today in Europe, because the media are always trying to explain to different scenario what could happen, but nobody knows exactly what is the situation. And the second point, which is in Europe, since years and years, people are convinced that first country which will always recover when we have a crisis is United States. So people are waiting for United States to recover, and they think that Europe is always recovering 2-3 years after United States. And as in United States, the situation is not ideal today. People are quite scared that the situation in Europe will take many, many years before seeing, a sun.
Richard, the New York Forum, your event, took place just before the bank reform deal was reached in Congress. But I'm curious, what was the general talk at the event, and what's your own feeling over what's in the regulations and what's left out? I guess it's notable that bank shares went up 3-4% on Friday, the day the deal was announced. Does that mean business leaders are happy with the efforts, or that it's not really going to regulate the banks in many new ways?
To be honest, the business leaders knows that definitely regulation is not negotiable anymore. But they hope that all the laws about regulation will not be too rigid, and they will not freeze totally and block the growth. So it's not easy to find the perfect regulation system. But what people said is, okay, we know that regulation is needed. Don't put it as the priority number one today. Why? Because we always think that the child do not make the same mistake that the parents. They do sometimes the same mistake that the grandparents. So not sure that the mistakes which were done in the past 2 years will be done again and made again in the next 2-3 years. So regulation is important, but don't be too tough with regulation, because we need also to give a flexible system. So which means flexible regulation and homogeneous. Don't put a regulation which is not at the same level of constraints, because we don't want corporations or banks to immigrate from the United States and to move to countries in Asia like Hong Kong, Singapore, where the system will be much more flexible.
So why not have global standards? This was a global financial crisis, and we constantly hear this caution, this concern that you just expressed, that if New York is regulated more than Tokyo or London, let's say, then deal makers are going to flee there. But this was a crisis of London and Tokyo as well as New York. So why not have, through forums like the New York Forum, through forums like Davos, and most of all the G20, where the countries are represented and they actually have the governments there with the power to enact some of these things, why not have global standards for transparency and for capitalization and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely right, Ryan. Absolutely right. This was one of the, I would say, recommendations from the New York Forum delegates. And we took also the commitment to first create the New York Forum Institute, which would be a platform to help to do a follow-up on all the recommendations and the proposals, and also to have a New York Forum interim meeting in Paris in February 2011, not to wait one more year, just before the next G20, not the one in Korea, but the one in France, because, as you know, France will lead the G20 and the G8 for 1 year in 2011, to establish a real dialogue between the private sector and the political leaders. And my personal conviction is that there is today an urgent need of a dialogue, of consultation between the private sector and the political leaders.
Well, that would be an unbelievable contribution if the New York Forum were able to establish itself as a place where people can talk about global standards. And I want to get your take finally on how much you think is real in this bank reform, how much is even known, and how much is really a giant loophole. There was an op-ed in today's Wall Street Journal pointing out that the legislation mostly sets up the regulatory structures. That is, it gives more power to the Fed, more power to the Securities and Exchange Commission over various aspects of trading, but that it's now up to these agencies to work out all the details, what the regulations are actually going to be. So there's a window now of weeks or months where intense lobbying behind the scenes will actually determine the new structure of banks and Wall Street. So is the whole thing that everybody was touting on Friday as, you know, the biggest bank reform since the Great Depression, is it really one giant loophole?
Oh, I don't know if this is what we need, you know. As you say, you know about the famous Volcker rule, too big to fail. And I think that today what really the business community is expecting is to have the process totally engaged and not to have the process to be too long, because this process is paralyzing the business community. They want banks to go back to their traditional business and to also be a little bit more flexible, and to have definitely, as I said before, a global consensus of something which would be much more homogeneous.
So your concern, you think the business's concerns are to get this next stage done quickly, because the uncertainty has been so crippling. And now they passed the bank reform bill, which establishes the topics that will be regulated, the areas of business and trading that will be regulated, and you're saying just get it done fast.
Yes, absolutely. And I think my recommendation, which came also from, I would say, 40% of the participants, which were not Americans, because we got people coming from all over the world, is to try to have in the United States, which is always showing the direction, the way, not to have the discussion too much politicized. you know better than me that today all the different discussions are very, very penetrated by political discussions.
But it's political, essentially, isn't it? I mean, if you get the banks with their concerns trying to get the rules written in their favor, that's essentially political. If you get...
No, what I mean, sorry, I was not clear. I'm not talking about not having political discussion. It's
yes.
not to have that political decision, which has to be political decision, not to be too much, I would say, put in perspective of having a debate between the Republicans and the Democrats, you know. I think we need to definitely have a consensus and to have everybody thinking of how can we help the body, which is not in good health today, which is economy, and to help that body to be more healthy. And we need to forget some, I would say, personal political convictions and to find what will be the best for the economy.
Richard Attias founded the New York Forum, which debuted in the city last week. And he's a previous producer of the World Economic Forum in Davos and helped launch the Clinton Global Initiative. And Richard Attias, thank you very much for coming on and talking economics with us.
Thank you very much for your invitation.
Brian Lehrer in WNYC. Well, the Supreme Court a little while ago ruled that the Second Amendment applies to states and cities. We'll talk about what it means in a minute.